Hello, and welcome to the 75th edition of the Running Anthropologist podcast. We are so happy that you joined us. I have a very special episode with a mentor of mine from the running community in Michigan, who has recently set the streak record for the most marathons ever run in a streak at a single marathon, that being the Boston Marathon. Very impressed by his all of his work there, as well as in the community of Michigan runners, where he has run every Detroit Marathon and every Frankenmuth Volkslauf Marathon as well. Super impressive guy. Very has a great impression of the running world, and also something to share with us today in terms of continuity and keeping on going through all the ups and downs that we may face, and the importance, especially of community, in training for and preparing for marathons and any distance event. Now, I have a very special request that you treat this particular recording as marathon training itself, knowing that the hard stuff gets you to the good stuff, because unfortunately, due to the way that it was recorded, there's a little bit of audio hopping throughout the episode. Can be perfectly understood, and Mark has some great nuggets of wisdom to share. But unfortunately, after consulting with some experts, due to the way that it's recorded, I can't clean up the audio quality anymore. It's just you'll notice some skipped words and skipped sections often throughout. With that in mind, know that Mark's end and all that Mark did was on the up and up, and it was definitely on my recording side, as we were both recording from our mobile devices. So thank you again, everyone, and appreciate you being here. And once again, look forward to hearing from you in your corner of the running world. Reach out to us on Instagram, Facebook, or on our blog site, runninganthropologist.com. Without further ado, let's get started. And welcome back to the Running Anthropologist. We have with us today Mark Baumann, and he is celebrating a run streak that is sort of unparalleled in that he just completed his 55th Boston Marathon, and it's a run streak world record from what I've been told, and I'm very excited to, you know, have had the opportunity to know a little bit about you and about your accomplishment, and just wanted to sit down and ask you a little bit about it, Mark.
Well, thank you. My pleasure to be with you.
Well, maybe we could start off by, again, this is not your first time, so perhaps some listeners know a little bit about you, but all of your running and your background is kind of revolved around Flint area in Michigan. How did you get started running, and where were you at in that area?
Well, I was in the Flint area in high school. Junior in high school was my first experience really with running. I guess there's kind of a odd story before that. A friend and I went out for track our sophomore year, and we looked at the track and said, that 400 yards is too long. So we went out for baseball that year.
That's funny. So you were a non-expectant or an untraditional distance runner. What distance did you start out running when you finally got convinced? Was it through your brother or through a family member that you? Okay.
Yeah, through my brother had talked to me over the summer and thought that I should run cross country, which is 2 miles at the time. Okay. And a friend of his was a runner, so he thought that would be a good thing for me.
Oh, okay. Neat. And how did you do with the distance at first? Did you enjoy it? Was it on a golf course or that sort of thing?
Well, some of the meets were golf courses. You know, our training was, you know, mostly on the school grounds. We had pretty sized school grounds, and actually our 2 mile cross country course was on the school grounds, and we started and finished on the track.
Oh, okay.
And at that time we had a non-cinder, a paved type track, which is one of the first around. So the coach tended to use that anytime he had the opportunity.
Now, when you say cinder track, Mark, is that just pieces of cinder, almost like mulch that's put down on the track?
Yeah, that's basically what all tracks were for a long time till the, I'm trying to remember what they're called. I don't think tartan was the first one, but it was those, you know, the surface
okay.
tracks and all weather tracks type surfaces.
Yeah, that's right. To be honest, I have never run on a cinder track. So is it softer than like the track that I'm used to?
Not necessarily. I mean, depends on what surface the track is you're on and maybe the temperature,
okay.
how new it is, how old it is.
Huh.
Those type of factors on the, the artificial surfaces.
Neat. Yeah, well, thanks for sharing that. And what was your favorite? Did you enjoy track or cross country more? And did you enjoy, like, the longer distances?
I enjoyed cross country more than track. And then when track started, you know, the next spring I went out for track. That was the first year that Michigan had a 2 mile in track.
Okay.
So basically, that was what I ran. That first year, I ran 1 800-yard, which is 2 laps of the track. And after the race, the coach said, "You're a 2 miler."
That's funny. I do a little coaching now, and funny enough, a lot of times some of those 4x800 runners are good. Mile and 2 milers too, and those are the longest distances, and on the track, you know, the consistent track now that the competition high schoolers do. Now, did you compete in college? Did you run in college?
I ran junior college in Flint.
Okay.
And I went to Murray State in Kentucky, and ran cross country there, and trained with the track team, but I was too slow to run any of the track meets.
Okay, neat. So yes, yeah, some good college running, and I'm sure you get to travel a little bit with the team in Kentucky.
Yes.
Is that how you kind of discovered some of the longer distance races, was through your time in college running?
Well, in junior college, the second year of junior college, my coach was running the Boston Marathon, 1930, and you know, he knew that I'm not a fast track runner, so he encouraged me to train with him to do it. And at that time, to qualify for Boston, if I remember correctly, was like a 4-hour marathon. There was probably a time for a hat or a note from your coach. And that's what I had, a note from my coach to get in.
Sure, and he was training with you, so he knew what you were able to do, and he'd done the training with you, so...
Right.
That was good enough for the Boston decision makers, I guess.
Right.
And it was that, I assume that first Boston was not your fastest one, but what was that experience like the first time that you ran Boston?
Well, it was my first marathon, you know, first time in a big crowd. Well, big crowd then was, you know, I don't know, maybe 1,000 people. And it was a great day, a cool day, and... it was quite an experience. There were people all along the course. At that time, one of the newspapers printed a list of all the runners in the race. And they would encourage you on by name because they could look you up quickly as you were coming by, like, you know, from your number.
Wow.
They printed everybody in the paper in numerical order, so it was easy for them to find them.
Wow, that's neat. In that, this was 1970?
Yes.
1970. Wow, that's pretty neat that your first marathon is the one that you've accomplished the longest streak, and is kind of must hold a very, very special place for you.
Oh, yes. I just consider myself extremely lucky in many ways.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. A few people that I've mentioned your record to have said, you know, how the heck did he stay injury-free and, you know, able to train that many seasons? So I guess that would be one question I'd have for you is, you know, did you more or less, and, you know, did you ever run injured? You know, so many people get all these training, tweaks and strains and, don't show up, you know, fully for race day. What was that like for you over the years?
Well, there have been a couple of years where I would have been coming off of some kind of injury, but not nothing serious that hampered my training. So my time was a lot slower than it normally would have been. But other than that, I've been extremely lucky. And I think part of it is, you know, genetics and being fairly consistent in training.
Yeah, you're training through the Michigan winter, of course, because you live in Michigan and it's cold in the months of preceding April. I assume that you do some snowy runs. And do you have a good cadre of folks that are willing to do the long runs with you year on year?
Oh, yes. I have a group that I train with, and, you know, they pretty much schedule their winter, spring around my training so that they can help me get long runs in, which obviously you need going into Boston.
Now, if you don't mind my asking, are they part of the Flint Runners Club or part of one of the clubs that you helped to start there in Flint area?
Riverbend Striders, yes.
That's it, Riverbend Striders. Now, as I recall, my mom did some years of running with the Riverbend Striders, and I was very young, so I got toted around some. But what was it like, you know, the atmosphere in the and the 70s and 80s with the Riverbend Striders and kind of local running club culture, you know, at that time?
People were, a lot of people were real serious about their running at that time. Hmm. And there were not many of us slower runners at that time. It was mostly faster, more serious runners. And what we would say about our races would be the most important thing was an accurate time and an accurate distance. Hmm. And that's what, you know, we strive to do with the Riverbend Striders at the time. Now, you know, we're more concerned about safety and water on the course, which, you know, at that time, you know, it was a 5K race. We didn't think of those things.
Hmm. Yeah, you didn't.
In fact,
go ahead.
Our oldest race with the Riverbend Striders is celebrating its 50th year this year.
Oh, is that right?
We may have ran it at some point, the Flushing Evening race.
Oh, yes, yes, I have.
Before the parade.
Yes, the Flushing Evening. And what is the date on that?
Oh, it's around it's on Wednesday night. I believe it's around the 18th of June.
Okay, yeah, midsummer when a lot of great road races happen in Michigan.
Right.
What I was going to ask connected to that, is, you know, for those club runners, I'm sure the turnout was, you know, mostly just those club runners for races. There weren't a lot of recreational runners at the time.
Right. Mostly, you know, club runners and, you know, people would, in the early days, people would travel quite a ways to get to a race. And I would do the same. I mean, I'd travel to Detroit, 60, 80 miles away, just so I could do a race. And then after, you know, 30, 40 years, you know, there are enough races locally where you didn't have to do that if you wanted to race, you know, once or twice a week.
Sure. And I'd love to, you know, talk more about that because I know there's a lot more clubs now and running has become more popular across not only Michigan, but across the country. When you started Bummins, when you started selling shoes out of the trunk of your car, were you mostly just kind of selling to, you know, high school and a few club runners, or was there really a lot of local buy-in where people said, oh, I want to start running, and, you know, there's a lot of people starting to run just from the general population?
There was a lot of that. Mostly it was the schools and, you know, the serious runners at races. Of course, those were the only ones I had contact with. You know, mm-hmm. I knew a lot of coaches, and I would have my car at the local races. So if there were recreational runners, I probably didn't even know about them, and they didn't know about me.
Were you coaching at the time too, Mark, in the club or at one of the schools?
I had a little coaching at the junior college.
Okay. Neat. Well, that's wonderful. I appreciate all the coaches I had growing up, and I try to do some of that here where we are now, here in our little part of Florida in Tampa.
And the training programs, which I think you're involved with training programs, those are extremely rewarding when you get new people training for something. It's their first time they did a 3 mile or a 4 mile run. I mean, it's great to celebrate that with them.
Absolutely. And I know that is one thing I had on my docket to ask you about. You've been really involved with CRIM training program, at least over the past decade, probably more. What is involved in that for you? And, you know, how has that program grown?
Now, that program trains people for the various events of the CRIM, which are 10-mile, 8K, 5K runs and walks. And we start early May, and races third Saturday of August. And the training program started in the early 90s. And it has well over 1,000 people in the training program.
Wow.
And you split up the groups by what events you're training for and your pace.
Okay.
And people are spread out around the community, meeting at different places and, you know, building up to a distance.
Neat. Yeah, and the Crim weekend is just quite a celebration for Flint. A few times I've had the honor of running it. It's just one of the best 10-milers in the country, if not the best. But, you know, I'm sure some others are contenders, but for me.
And if I remember right, it started 1 year before the Gasparilla.
Oh, is that right? Okay. And was that late 70s?
Yes.
Okay.
77. And then the Crim did not do anything COVID year. Well, okay. They did a virtual, but didn't, you know, count it as a race like most of the races did.
Yeah, that was the year I was born, by the way, Mark. So I'll have to ask my mom if she ran it that year, 77. Anyway, I'll have to ask Paula about my mom or see if my mom had a recording of it somewhere. Okay, so are you a routine person in general, Mark? Like, do you tend to follow similar training plans every year or just kind of adjusting them slightly? In other words, what's allowed you to keep going and achieve this record?
Well, the group I run with, you know, we run mornings, usually go out at 7:30 and run usually 5 days a week and try to do our long runs Wednesday or Saturday. And the long runs based on what we're, you know, building up to. And then with having an option of 2 different days a week to run, some will depend on weather. Could be hot, could be snowy. So we, you know, we adjust accordingly.
Okay. And what I want to think about how I want to ask this. What is it about, I want to ask about Detroit as well. What is it about Detroit and Boston and kind of training and preparing for both of those that makes you want to come back, that makes you want to do it again and again?
Well, spread out, you know, with Boston being in the spring, Detroit being in the fall, you get a little downtime after each one, and then you start building up again for the next one.
Hmm.
So that worked out well.
Got it. Yeah, so Detroit is always in beginning of October, mid-October?
Yeah, about the third week of October, really.
Okay. And so I should note, and I believe this is correct, that you've also ran every Detroit marathon since it started?
Yes.
Okay. And what year was that?
That was 78.
Okay. All right. Wow. That's amazing. So you got a pretty good streak going there too. And just slightly longer at Boston, a few years longer. What sort of special things do they do at either of those races for those of you that have, you know, that have ran a lot, or in the case of Detroit, that ran every marathon? Do you get any kind of special experience? Do they kind of announce you, or do you get any perks for doing that?
Well, the perk in Boston is I don't have to do the traditional qualifying for Boston. If you do 25 in a row, you are automatically in, as long as the previous year you finish in 6 hours from when the last person crossed the starting line.
Okay.
For me, this year would have been about 6:45, I'm guessing.
Okay, you had a good cushion there. Yeah.
I had a good cushion, yes.
Wow, that's great.
The races themselves, they don't do much. You know, sometimes at Detroit, usually there's a local newspaper guy at the finish line who will, you know, grab me and interview me. At Boston, most of the stuff we do in recognition of the 25-year-plus club, which you call a quarter-century club, that's basically our own organization. We do our own stuff. Boston, you know, they just, you know, they're into elite runners. And those are the, you know, the people who have agents who are out there promoting themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what people want to hear about, is, you know, the elites.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. It's kind of a pinnacle of that sort of thing, one of the major marathons. And, well, I got to thinking, as you mentioned that, Mark, if you had a half-century club, of course, you would be in it. It would be a small club. Are there others whom you know that are in the half century club there at Boston?
There are three of us in it.
Okay.
One guy is retired, and the other did his 52nd or 3rd this year. And there's one other guy in our quarter century club who's done, I think he's done 53, 54, but he missed 1 year. So it's not consecutive.
Okay. Nonetheless, very impressive. And to have over 50 Boston Fishes, I'm sure you guys have a lot to talk about when you get together. Yeah. What has changed over the years? And I'd be, of course, since I'm from the area, I'd be interested to hear about Detroit as well. What has changed over the years in terms of the marathons themselves? And you know, what have you seen that you like or didn't like, or just changes that you're kind of neutral about?
Well, the changes, the organization of them, they're way more organized than they ever were. You know, their aid stations are out there, mile marks out there. I mean, it was years before Boston had real mile marks.
Really?
The if you go back and look old Boston information, the markings were little signs in the center of each town that would say how many miles to go.
Random.
Like 15.9 miles to go.
Yeah.
And that would be all markings. And now you look at results, you'll see the times of people at different splits. Well, they kept times of the elite runners at those marks along the way, and they would publish that for years.
Yeah, and folks didn't have their Garmins to accurately measure all the time. So
they didn't have their Garmins, and there would be people along the course who would say, hey, you got 5 miles to go. You knew you had 10, but they were the college kids out there just doing their thing.
Yeah. That's funny. And of course, both of them have gotten much, much bigger. I'm sure Boston in particular, because it's always sold out, or it's always oversold, more entries, fewer entries than what people want to enter, of course.
Right.
This year.
And it's good timing. Well, when they start getting bigger, you know, your time is now when you cross the starting line to the finish. When the crowd started getting bigger, it was all gun time. Your time started when the gun went off, even if it took you 10 minutes to get to the starting line.
Is that right? And when did they start with the chip timing?
If I recall correctly, the 100th Boston was the first year that we wore the little yellow chips on our shoes.
I remember the shoe chips. Yeah.
Yeah, chip. Yes, so that we turned in at the end.
All right. So that would have been about 30 years ago or so, huh?
Right.
All right. Yeah, that's definitely a big step up in terms of, and that seems like every 5K you go to, they have a chip on your bib. So everyone
on your bib, so your time is from when you cross the starting line. Exactly.
Right. Yeah, that is definitely a perk. Now I've heard that there's also a little bit of a party scene in Boston now that there wasn't, you know, originally it was mostly runners and a few of their friends. And the people from those neighborhoods that would come out and cheer you. Has it always been a really supportive community feel, and have there always been so many people cheering along the way?
Yes, in a year like this year where it was warm for runners in the 70s, there were more people out, and at one time there was basically no crowd control. So, I mean, you'd get into Boston, and it might be two runners wide, the path.
Really? Wow.
The crowd's that close to you. I mean, it's great in Wellesley when the girls were close to you, but the rest of it wasn't quite as comfortable.
Right. You have, that's right. It's not quite so hot then, and you have a little more room on the road at Wellesley. But then when you, like you said, when you get downtown, I'm sure it's hot and more people as you get closer to the finish.
Yeah, it can be a lot warmer downtown unless there's breeze coming off of Boston Harbor, then it's cooler.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure. So that was another thing I wanted to ask you about. I'm sure they've been really bad weather years. You don't have to mention the specific year, but if you remember, what have been some of the worst experiences you've had?
Well, heat-wise, it was 76. It was 100 degrees on the course.
Wow.
Third Monday of April.
Wow. 100 degrees on the course. Yes. 1976. Wow, I did not know that. Huh.
Yeah, I ran... It was like 15 minutes lower than the year before, and I was something like 8 places further back.
Wow. Well, that's because you're from Michigan. I'm sure you do much better on the cold weather in Boston days. Yeah, and I've just in my time, I've seen, you know, the snowy, rainy, windy days in Boston that just did not look fun.
Well, that day is better for me than heat.
Okay.
Even that cold, rainy, windy, in-your-face day, I ran better than I would if it had been, you know, in the 70s or above.
Okay. What do you do? So this may be a simpleton question, but what do you do for, you know, when it is rainy and cold? Like, what do you do for your shoes? How do you keep yourself from being just drenched and cold?
Wear a couple of layers. Now, that the cold, rainy year in Boston, generally you wore pants. And looking back, I probably didn't have to and didn't plan on it, but I just couldn't take them off at the start. Uh-huh. It was, you know, cold and rainy. And after that, I weighed my shoes and clothes when I got home, and they were 14 pounds.
Wow.
And I had a sweatshirt that I was going to pitch at the start, and I wrapped it, tied it around my waist because I was afraid if I started walking, I would freeze. So I kept that with me.
Of course, running gear and tech gear has come a long way, probably since that time. But we had one. I was pacing a marathon here at Disney, and it wasn't that cold. It was probably like in the 60s, and it just got soaked wet, and I was freezing. I don't know how you do it. I really don't know how you do it when it's raining in Boston and, you know, 30, 40 degrees out. I don't know if I could do it. keeping that inner heat going, I guess, is important.
Yes, it is. And it's probably worse for something like you being a pacer, running maybe a half hour slower than you normally would go, where if it's somebody doing as much as they can close to their normal time, they're going to build more heat than you would.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, no, that is a good point. And I've also often thought, like, man, is it worth it to carry this jacket? Well, that day it was worth it to carry a jacket, because as soon as the rain came down, just that light jacket is good to have. Anyways,
jackets are great on a rainy day, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it saved me. It really did. I want to ask a little bit about this year, about your world record experience at Boston. You had family there, and you had some friends that were running alongside you. Who were those people, and how did they find you and run with you?
Well, they rode out the subway and jumped in for a few miles.
Oh, I see.
Because a friend from Michigan, a granddaughter and a niece.
Oh, great. And they're all runners, your niece and your granddaughter?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
And they jumped out, you know, before the finish line.
So running is in family. You've passed it down. What kind of running have your kids and grandkids done?
My kids done some running. Son did some track and cross country, and the granddaughter who ran with me, actually I'm out here in Phoenix this weekend, she's running in the state meet high school. She's a senior.
Oh, great. Well, good luck. Yeah, this is the time for state meets and regionals and all that stuff. Well, I hope that is wonderful. And is your wife a runner? Did you meet her through running?
Yes, she's a runner, yes.
What?
She doesn't run many marathons. She ran, I think, two or three marathons. Disney, Honolulu, I think that's it. So maybe just two.
Okay, you'd mentioned, I think at one point when we've met, I tend to meet you either in Michigan at your store or here at Gasparilla. You had mentioned that Honolulu is one of your favorite places to run. You guys go as often as you can. What is that like, and where do you go when you guys go?
Well, we now go to Maui.
Okay.
There's less people, and, you know, just run along the beach roads, and, you know, it's so peaceful.
I bet. Is it
warm for us, but yeah, you kind of get used to it after a few days.
Okay. I was going to ask, is there a certain time of year that's best for running vacations and when you go?
Usually I try to go early January.
Okay.
It's a little slower tourism time. And I've hooked up with a half marathon out there in Maui Oceanfront Marathon, which has a half. And done that a couple times, which gives me a long run in January also.
Yeah, now, correct me if I'm wrong, but now that you're sort of retired, that you've passed the baton, so to speak, in your running store, have you been able to travel more during the winter, or what sort of things are keeping you busy?
Yeah, I and my wife, I some and both of us some we travel more. I tend to become a little selfish and keep myself at home the last 2 months before my marathons because I need the long runs. And I know I'm not getting a long run in if I'm in Hawaii or anywhere. I don't have like the support.
Yeah, makes all the difference.
Yeah, it does.
Now, your wife's obviously there too. Has she does she have any kind of a streak going with you in Detroit? Not the marathons, but or the Frankenmuth races?
No, she basically runs a crim now.
Okay.
That's about the only race she ever does anymore.
That's wonderful, though. Again, I think that's amazing. And when you started your streak way back in the day for Boston, do you have any inkling, any idea that you would be running marathons this long?
No, I was hoping to get one in and said, hey, I did it. And I just got hooked.
What hooked you? What do you think is the thing that, and I experienced this too, what is the thing that keeps people coming back and running marathons like Boston and Detroit?
Yeah, it's accomplishment, getting to the finish line, that endorphin feeling. Yes, it's really good to feel.
Do you think that the training is part of it for you? Do you enjoy the training as much as the day of?
I enjoy the training, especially when I train. I'm training with a group of people, so we're not pushing training; we're just having a good time. So there's a lot of jibber jabber going back and forth, and that's the thing I really look forward to.
Yeah, I get that as well. Sometimes I often think like the day of is so stressful and I get the nerve going, but the training, is the fun part, or at least the part that you build relationships and you
Right.
99% of your time is the training miles.
Yes.
Anyway, so you now have, and correct me if I'm wrong, but around 1,400 miles at Boston, on the roads, and you probably have, a good almost 1,000 miles in Detroit or something like that. What is the thing that you would share with others who are perhaps starting their first marathon or who are working on, building up to a longer distance like a marathon? What's the master tip? What is the key or a few things that you want to mention?
Well, pacing is extremely important. Make sure you do not start out too fast and go by the conditions. I mean, if there's a lot of headwind, hey, you're not going to go as fast. If it's hot, you're not going to go as fast. So make sure you do what you're capable of doing and enjoy it. Enjoy yourself.
That's great advice. Now, did you follow that advice the year that you ran 2:30 at Boston?
Not really. I
Okay.
was pushing it pretty much the whole way. It was a great day and I was in good shape.
Now
I was ready.
you kind of knew your pace limit and you pushed it.
Right.
And is that your best ever marathon time, or have you ran faster times at others?
Yes,
Okay.
I know that's a PR, yes.
That's something to run that at Boston, right? Because it's historically a difficult course. So,
Historically is, but if you get to 21 miles and you're feeling good, there are some downhills. And you can, do well, but if you beat yourself up on the hills, then you're in trouble.
yeah, that's a great tip. Did you do hill training, a lot of hill training to get ready for those?
Some, yes,
Okay.
and just a lot of miles, so there's a lot of strength there. I did a lot of 100 mile weeks when I was younger.
Yeah, that helps for sure. Cool. Well, Mark, as always, it's an honor to talk with you, and it's so cool to be able to celebrate a little bit with you after your record here. Once again, just looking to the future, do you have an intention of keeping this streak going?
Yeah, as long as I can stay healthy and get in a qualifying time for the next year.
All right. Well, that's great. And do you intend to keep the Frankenmuth folks race and Detroit Marathon streaks going as well?
Sure.
Neat. Well, I'm going to put it on my calendar. I of course I can't be the deciding factor about Boston, but I'm going to put it on my calendar to meet you at one of those other two, which I can guarantee getting into, and hope to spend some time with you up there. So thank you again, Mark, and again thank you for all that you do through Baumann's and the wonderful people and all the runners that you've impacted over the years, and I'm sure many more were inspired by your record here this year. And congratulations.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
All right, Mark. I'm going to stop the recording here. And thanks so much for being a part of the Running Anthropologist podcast this episode. We have not been broadcasting in a while, and we're super happy that you were able to join us for this special episode. As we go into the spring season, we'll be having more podcast interviews and a little bit more about races and special events. So I hope that you can join us for those. You can always keep up with us on our blog site, runninganthropologist.com, and explore and share some of your favorite corners of running culture. We'd love to hear about them. You can share those out by reaching out to us at runninganthropologist on Instagram or Facebook. And of course, you can also share with us on the blog site, runninganthropologist.com, and look forward to hearing from you. If you have suggestions about people we should interview or places we should be talking about, we'd love to hear it. And wishing you and yours, as always, till next time, happy running.